Oh, that's a wonderful sound, isn't it? Sound of water, maybe a river, maybe a lake. Oh, makes me want to get the canoe out and get going. And we're going to talk about canoeing and maybe kayaking, paddling. We'll just call it paddling, pedaling, and camping next on the show. What do they all have in common? Well, in Wisconsin, there are plenty of places that offer the best of all three activities. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We'll talk about some wonderful destinations throughout our state. You can paddle, you can pedal, you can camp. Our guest today, Timothy Bauer, knows a lot. He is a self-confessed kayak junkie, the author of the book Canoeing and Kayaking South Central Wisconsin, 60 Paddling Adventures Within 60 Miles of Madison. So he's been with us several times. Always fun to have him back. And as we visit with him, I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have about where to camp when you're paddling? Maybe are you looking for a route to take on your vacation? Maybe you've got an experience to share or just questions to ask in general about kayaks or canoes. Love to hear from you. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Timothy Bauer, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hey, Larry. It's great to be back. Thank you.
Well, summer's here. Lots of people are looking for outdoor adventures. Think about over the past year or so, the pandemic year. Have you noticed more folks out on the rivers?
Absolutely. To go hand in hand, I think, with more people out on cross-country trails, more people in campgrounds themselves being booked out for sometimes months on end. I think the year of the pandemic and the quarantine will go down as when many people discovered the outside.
Yeah, I think you hope. Well, do you think it's going to be the same this coming year?
I hope so. The more people outside means that we're less indoors, less behind a screen, and I think that's a good thing. I don't know if it'll, you know, ratchet down as things become a bit more normalized moving ahead this summer, but I suspect people will continue to be outdoors, especially now that they've had a taste of it, more so than they probably were familiar in the last year. I don't think that's going to change too much, because if all this was relatively new to you because you had nowhere to go and you were sick of being inside your own house, why would you turn your back on it now?
Yeah, why would you? And you probably maybe invested a little bit of money already, so why not use that efficiently?
Right, exactly. So
callers online already. Maybe let's take a call. Gary in Madison, your turn. What's up?
Yeah, I had a question about the stream down there, going down through Black Earth, the trout stream that goes out 14 there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we had taken some kayaks out there last year, and we got in right around the shoe store out there.
I feel like I already know where this is going, Gary.
We came upon the cattle fence, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Which really, it was pretty dangerous. My wife got really hung up on one close to the shore. I happened to go over more in the middle. I guess two things. Well, how should you approach those things, and how come it's not marked?
Yeah, those are really good questions, Gary. The folks who operate the farm right there have really tried to work with paddlers. That's not always the case with farmers or just landowners in general, but these folks really have. The problem that continues to occur at that spot is the cattle either find a way through the paddler-friendly fences that have been experimented with in the past, or we have these giant 6-inch rain flooding events that wipe out the fence. So what's currently up there now is a solution that technically does allow paddlers a way through. That's, I believe, state law mandates that you can have a barrier on a river, essentially to keep your cattle from escaping, but it does have to have a way through for water vessels. It's a little bit more beefed up, no pun intended, than some cattle fences, which are usually just either barbed wire or electrical. This has a couple moving panels to it. And admittedly, I've gone through it. It's not the easiest thing to do. It's one of the spoiling parts of what it is otherwise a nice section of Black Earth Creek from the shoebox down to about the high school. This might be remedied in the future. Again, it has been attempted a few times, but there's always some sort of calamitous event that starts back to zero. So for that reason, I really recommend people who are interested in doing Black Earth Creek, and you should, it's a great little treasure, starting at Olson Road, which is immediately upstream of and west of the high school there. And you could take that essentially down to one of a few different takeout points in Mazamani, depending on how many miles you want to do and also what your tolerance is of fallen trees. But there's at least a really nice, about 3.5 mile section from Olson Road to Walking Iron Park on the north side of Mazo. That is, you get the best of little Class 1 rapids, some good views of the Driftless Hills. Makes for a relatively short day, but sometimes that's great if you only have a couple hours to do and you happen to live nearby anyway.
Yeah, there you go. Gary, thank you for calling. And Richard in Two Rivers, hi.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I got the canoe out yesterday, and it was very pleasurable. I took it out, and I buried it, and I made a koi pond out of it, and I set up the rocks, and the koi's love it, so it's going to lose everything now.
Well, that's one way to do it, of bringing the water to you as opposed to you going to the water.
Richard, thanks for calling. Well, as long as we get around the phones here. Al in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Al.
Good morning. My question is just a little background. My wife and I are section hiking the Ice Age Trail, and then when we're done with this, I would like to section paddle the Wisconsin River from its headwaters to where it meets the Mississippi. My question is, I think it starts up by Lake Vue d'Isere. And that, do you know if that is basically paddling from, or floatable from there south where it first starts? And then the question is, what would you recommend for a vessel for two people that, you know, aren't the best experienced at it to do that type of a trip? This won't start for probably 5 to 10 years, but I've been doing some research and I'm really curious about your opinion. So thank you.
Sure. It's a great question, Al. And it's a very admirable task to take up. You're looking at approximately 430 miles of paddling in what will be a very diverse terrain as the Wisconsin River traverses the whole state, north, south, east, and west. You're correct, the headwater is up there in Lake Vue d'Isere, or however it's pronounced, I apologize. Little lake that straddles the UP border. It has been paddled. You wouldn't be alone in folks who have endeavored to do the entire thing from source to the mouth at the Mississippi. There was a woman who is maybe still is the director of the Wisconsin Conservation Alliance. I believe her name is Ruth. She did this trip, I want to say like 5 years ago or so. And she did it in a kayak, probably about 12, 14 feet, so recreational kayak. A couple of things you want to consider ahead of time and do some research in. One, you're going to be doing a lot of portaging because independent of any natural trees or beaver dams that are going to impede your flow, there are 26 total industrial dams on the river, including one right at the source. So you want to have a boat that you're going to be able to lug around reasonably around these portages, because some of them are going to require a bit of schlepping. You also want to have a boat, of course, that will be able to handle a fair amount of gear. You're not going to be able to carry all your gear for one trip. You'll do lots of stops along the way to resupply and whatnot. But a boat that can handle different compartments of gear for your essentials, a lot of rigging, the bungee cord stuff on the top deck of a kayak would be good to tie your stuff down. The alternative, of course, to this is if you try to do this in a canoe, a two-person canoe, you'll have a lot more room for your gear, but you'll have a little bit of finagling to do, especially in the very up the headwaters, because it's a pretty narrow stream up there.
And we can talk some more about that. We need to take a quick look at the news, weather. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back with Timothy Bauer to talk more about paddling and pedaling. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Talking about spending a little time on the water here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today. Visiting about places in Wisconsin that combine the very best paddling, pedaling, and camping adventure with our guest today, Timothy Bauer. Writer, lover, of an outdoor enthusiast, had been paddling around Wisconsin and our neighboring states since about 2008. He's also the author of the book Canoeing and Kayaking South Central Wisconsin, 60 Paddling Adventures within 60 Miles of Madison. So, planning a paddling trip, what do you want to know about preparation? What questions do you have? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Timothy, I think right when we broke for news, I think you were just kind of finishing up talking about that couple that want to paddle the whole length of the Wisconsin River.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just to follow through with that, I'd say, Al, if you're still out there, that in the first 30 miles or so before the Wisconsin River picks up more volume from other neighboring streams, it's going to be pretty tight going. And so a bigger boat, like a two-person canoe, might be more frustrating than two smaller-size, lightweight kayaks. So just something to think about and do a little bit of research before you take up this trip.
Yeah, just in general, on a trip like that, I think sometimes the two would be better than one. Two mm-hmm. canoes, two kayaks would be better than one, and just for conversing and everything else along the way.
Yeah, plus sometimes a canoe could be a good medium for two people arguing at each other and going at, you know, different paces and making paddling on one side and not the other way and not reading each other's minds. And that could go. Sometimes having two kayaks, two people in individual kayaks is easier than two people in one canoe.
Yeah. John and Boaz, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. I want to make sure that your listeners wear their life jackets because you need them in a canoe. I was out on Boom Lake, way up on the beginning of the Wisconsin River near Rhinelander. It's about 10 football fields big, and I heard a loon calling from shore or near the shore, and I stopped my canoe, and it was a real calm day, and then he called again and again and again. And I thought, oh, wow, isn't that a beautiful sound? Well, then over on my left, way near the other shore, I heard another loon. And she was calling. And after 20 seconds, both of them ran toward the middle of the lake. They kind of paddle and flap their wings, and they go just a little bit up flying, but mostly close to the water. And then they got about 40 feet from my canoe, and they both went down in the water. And they stayed down for about 2 minutes.
Yeah. Now, you know, those are the kind of experiences that you can have in a canoe or a kayak. Thanks for that, John. Right, Tim?
Absolutely. And, yeah, John, that's a really evocative moment. That's great to be in that spot at that time. And exactly right, Larry. There, I like to think of paddling as giving you a passport to a world hidden behind the scenes sometimes that you can't get to on dry land. And whether that's a river or a lake or one of the Great Lakes, you just have access to stuff that normally you can't get to by car or even by hiking boots.
Yeah. Kelly from Sugar River Outfitters shot an email in, and Sugar River Outfitters offers basic instruction, guide service to individuals and or groups who are possibly first-time river paddlers or groups with folks who want the security of an experienced paddler tagging along. If you're looking for a resource, Sugar River Outfitters, and I'm sure familiar with them.
Yeah, I believe I've had the good pleasure of meeting Kelly 2 years ago after a couple rounds of email throughout a few years before that. But they provide, like you said, really nice trips, and you could just rent the gear, or they'll give you, you know, a shuttle ride if that's what you're looking for, too. Trips usually curtail down in the small town of Paoli, and it's a really pretty spot, old, three or four story tall mill, brewery, the hop house is there, a couple great places for food, often live music now, especially in summer. Just a really pleasant picnic spot to end your trip, and some neat fun paddling, whether it's 4 or 5, 6, 7 mile trip, mostly good for new beginners as well. So I'd recommend that trip, definitely.
Russ in Wyawega, we'll go to you next. Hi, Russ.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Russ.
My question is, I'm an old man, and I'm having a harder time getting in and out of a kayak and my canoe, and I was wondering if there's any kind of contraption that you could add to a kayak or canoe where it would make it easier for me to get in and out. I'll turn off and listen.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, Russ. Thanks for the question. I don't particularly know of any such aftermarket appendage you could use for either canoe or kayak. There may be out there. I'm just not familiar with that because I'm not usually privy to the inner workings of companies and their new products. The two things that come off to the top of my head are throughout the state, there is a continuing trend for making different docks and piers more ADA accessible. So that's not quite the same thing, but it's an apparatus, usually a floating dock with bars, that make it easier to get in and out of a kayak or canoe because you could hold on to a bar and get some leverage that way. The other idea, of course, is canoes are a lot easier to get in and out of than kayaks. I forget who exactly said this. It might have been Darren at Rutabaga. Getting into a kayak sometimes is like getting into an ill-fitting shoe, whereas a canoe, you could just kind of dive right on in.
Pop right in.
Yeah.
Russ, there you go. John in Madison emailed, do you have any advice on trying to do a multi-day trip on the Brule River if the two campgrounds along the river are already full? Being in a state forest, can you do dispersed camping if you get off the river?
Yeah, that's a good question. Just for a point of clarification, because I swear, Larry, this comes up each time I've been on the air. There are two rivers with the word Brule in them in Wisconsin, and they're both northern referring to, I believe, is the Bois Brule.
Yeah, Bois Brule, sorry.
No, that's okay. And it's surrounded by the Bois Brule State Forest. There are two campgrounds, and one of them has non-reservable sites, the northernmost one. So your odds could be pretty good, especially if you show up, on a Thursday or midweek, not necessarily a Friday, and probably not on a holiday weekend, especially these days. I don't know offhand about dispersed camping in that particular state forest. I'd say there's probably a good chance of that, but I don't want to say that on the record per se. Just give a holler to the DNR associated with the state forest up there, and they'll let you know exactly what the rules are. If you're doing this by boat, it's going to get a little bit tricky getting in and out of the banks and then finding a place that won't be, necessarily covered with tick potential and any poisonous plants. So there are a lot of cautions to keep in mind with dispersed camping, both to the natural landscape itself and you yourself, your body, or anyone who's with you. But I think the DNR could tell you right away about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we could talk a little bit about this whole business. So I've talked about pedaling and paddling.
Mm-hmm.
Bike shuttles, how does that make life easier for paddlers, for example? Just talk about it in general first.
Sure, yeah. It makes life a lot easier, especially if you're paddling alone, because if you're on a river, it'll go from point A to point B. And to avoid paddling back upstream and fighting a current, you typically want to have one mode of transportation on each end where you begin and end a trip. So for those of us who sometimes do paddle alone, the simplest thing to do is leaving a bicycle, typically, not always, but typically at the end of the trip, so where you think you're going to take your boat out at the end of your trip. Leave your bicycle there, and then you'll leave your canoe or kayak or paddleboard where you've left your bicycle. You're just going to switch one lock system to another, and then you'll pedal back up to where you started your trip, where you probably left the car. The thing that's nice about this, too, even whether you're actually by yourself or you're with another, you get to experience the landscape from a completely different perspective. Plus, after you've been sitting down in a boat for 2 to 5 hours, it's nice to get up and use your legs because, for paddling, you really are typically only using your torso and your arms and, to a degree, your hips, but you're really not doing a whole lot with your legs. So wherever the river is, there's typically, a bike shuttle way of doing it. Wisconsin happens to be particularly endowed with a lot of state trails that have a nearby river or even a directly corresponding river. There are a lot of examples. I'm happy to dive into any of those weeds. But they are all around the state, too. It's not just necessarily one part of the state and the rest don't have them. Because of the popularity of bicycling in general, there is a correlation, I guess, between more population centers. But there are designated trails throughout the whole state, and many of them either directly correspond to a river or at least have one very nearby that you can use that dedicated state trail as a great bike shuttling option that's very pretty. It also keeps you off the roads, any highways and whatnot if there's a concern of safety on being in some back roads. A designated trail is a really special place to go from point A to point B.
Yeah, absolutely. Julian Rhinelander emailed. She was kayaking this weekend out of Lake George in Rhinelander to the Pelican River toward the Wisconsin River. It was a beautiful paddle, but they never reach the Wisconsin River, and it took about twice as long as they'd anticipated.
Yeah.
They had a hard time finding accurate information for the area. They're wondering if there's a good guide you can recommend for northern Wisconsin and tips for finding viable places to camp while kayaking.
Certainly. And sorry, Julie, I can relate to having a goal in mind and then being humbled by the gods that decree that there's going to be something else in your cards that day. I think we've all been there in one manner or another. The two ideas that immediately come up, the Northern American Highland, or I think I get that wrong every single time, but the Northern Legion, American Highland, it's something like that. They have a huge forest area up in the northern footprint of the state, mostly in the northeast, but it's large swath of northern Wisconsin. They have various brochures of the different paddle trails, different hiking trails, cross-country, ATV, snowmobile, stuff like that. And many correspond with maps that will have paddle routes together with them. So you can get a pretty decent gauge about river to lake, lake to river. A lot of the lakes up there are connected by rivers. So you'll get I don't think they necessarily have a map for every area, but they usually cover big, areas at one time. And so the specific nook you're looking for might be in one of those, and it should be free to the public. The other thing I will plug, and I do so with a caveat, is the website I'm very happy to be a part of, milespaddled.com. It is currently under reconstruction, so if you go there right now, you'll get a message saying, hang on, we're going to be back up and running in a couple of weeks. But my partner in it, Barry, last year, spent a tremendous amount of time putting together a series of best paddling and camping areas throughout the whole state, not just the Northeast. It's a guide that's is unique to our little website, but as soon as we're up and running again, which will be by the end of June, you can find your neck of the woods and see what the best paddling is. And a lot of it's lake paddling, too. It's not all river paddling.
So it's milespaddled.com. Milespaddled.com. So that's a good thing. I get that marked right now on your computer so that you can turn to it. You gave a talk about the Driftless area at this year's virtual Canucopia event, and we were talking about the Driftless area for fly fishing a little earlier, but what makes this area so special and unique, particularly when it comes to paddling?
Yeah, I'm so glad to hear the Driftless get its plug and your previous show, because it does have the largest concentration of cold water trout streams in the entire world. It's not necessarily, some people think of other places like Montana or the chalk streams of northern England, and rightfully so, but right in our backyard, we have more cold water trout streams than anywhere on the planet, which is a pretty remarkable thing to think of. The Driftless is so special because it just looks like nothing else in the surrounding upper Midwest. It is a pocket of four different states. Wisconsin has the largest section of the area, followed by northeastern Iowa, southeastern Minnesota, and northwestern Illinois. It is comprised that the whole area is roughly the size of West Virginia. So if you think of the upper Midwest and superimpose something the size of West Virginia, that's the Driftless area, and it's an island, basically, that escaped glaciation, not just 13,000 years ago, but many millions of years ago in earlier glaciation cycles. So because it was never glaciated, it doesn't look like anything around it. It wasn't bulldozed. It is marked by tall cliffs and deep caves, towering bluffs. It has landscape features that you can't find anywhere this far south, because it's kind of associated with the Ice Age. So you have to go up into Canada to find certain plants and certain animal species. But right here, there's a little nook of it in this part of the country. What makes it so great for paddling is the whole area is largely formed by rivers. So all these deep cliffs and the caves, sinkholes, it's moving water that has formed them. If you look at a topographical map of the area, you'll see what looks to be like fractal patterns or, you know, various fingers reaching throughout the landscape, and all of those are either current or ancient riverbeds that incised the sandstone and limestone, which is the predominant features out that way. And so it is a place blessed with and born by rivers. It's some of the best paddling you're going to find in the upper Midwest.
Yeah, it is definitely a beautiful place. Is some of that covered in your book?
Yeah, thank you for asking. The book has Madison kind of as its central point, just for sake of ease. So Madison and Dane County sit basically right on the eastern edge of the Driftless. So all you have to do is just drive about 20 minutes west, northwest, or southwest of Madison, and you will slip into a landscape that looks very, very different than anything on the east side of Dane County. So the book itself got divided into, four quadrants, northeast, southwest, et cetera. So I think it's the second half of the book, the trip southwest and northwest of Madison, almost every single one of those trips will be enclosed within the Driftless area.
Timothy, it is always a pleasure. I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. We'll look forward to your next visit. Thank you.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much, Larry. It's always a lot of fun.
Timothy Bauer, his book is Canoeing and Kayaking South Central Wisconsin, 60 Paddling Adventures within 60 Miles of Madison. So that's the book, and the website that they're just improving on right now is milespaddled.com, milespaddled.com. Great to have him with us today. June is Invasive Species Action Month, so we'll talk about terrestrial invasive plants, aquatic invasives, forest pests, and some invasive animals in Wisconsin on tomorrow's show, and talk about why it's important to spread awareness through the state. Thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.